Hi there, my name is Michael Bernardi. I play Morpha, the innkeeper, in the current production of Fiddler on the Roof on Broadway. I also understudy the rabbi, and I also understudy the role of Pevia, which my father actually played on Broadway many years ago, and it's all very absurd. Today, I'll be talking with Rabbi Saul Solomon on Dave's Gone By on UNC Radio.
Oh, shalom, shalom, my friends, l'chaim to life to you all. This is your old pal, Rabbi Saul Solomon, founder and spiritual leader of Temple Sons of Bitches in Great Neck, New York. And I have played a rabbi on the radio, I have played a rabbi on stage, and this is very exciting to me. I am going to be talking now to an actor who is also playing a rabbi on the stages of New York. His name is Michael Bernardi, Michael C. Bernardi. If that last name rings a bell for you, it should, because his father was known for this wonderful musical called Fiddler on the Roof, and now there is this continuum, because his father played Tevye in Fiddler all those years ago, and many times on tour, and now we're going to be talking to his son, Michael, who is playing currently Mordcha in the new Fiddler on the Roof, and he's going to have a chance to play Tevye. So exciting! Ladies and gentlemen, please welcome to the neighborhood, Michael C. Bernardi. Shalom to you!
Ah, shalom. Thank you. What an incredible introduction, Rabbi. I'm honored, really.
Oh, you should be. You should be honored. You play Mordcha, an innkeeper, so it's not really a rabbi in Fiddler.
I mean, I play more for the innkeeper, and I would say, you know, to some people, their innkeeper is kind of like their rabbi. They divulge their secrets. So in that way, yes, I am that kind of rabbi. But I also understudy the rabbi, the actual rabbi.
Ah.
And I also understudy Tevye, the big shot.
Now, have you played the rabbi yet?
I've done it multiple times.
Okay, so you have gone already on stage as the rabbi.
Yes. May God bless Bazaar and... I forgot the line.
Far away from us. Well, yeah.
From us.
But is it weird when you're understudying and you have... So you've been playing Mordcha, that's your main role, the tavern keeper, right?
My main guy.
Right. When you went on as the rabbi, was it weird watching another person play Mordcha? Were you sort of through a looking glass at that point? It's like, wait a minute, I should be saying that.
Oh, absolutely, yes. And anyone who says differently is just a liar. Those are your clothes. And the terrifying thing is there's two covers for Mordcha. One of them, a very slender man, a very, very beautiful man, but he's a little scrawny, and so he wears my clothes, and I go, oh, okay, he doesn't really fill them out. It's so sweet, but he does the role fantastic. There's this other guy, his name's Eric Chambliss. He is an Adonis, okay? And Matt Moisey, who's the other cover, he would agree. He's an Adonis. He is the tallest, most handsome Jew anyone has ever seen. And when he covers me, there's this sense of dread because I look at what my clothes should look like. It's so sad. I look at that man wearing my vest like a god.
But it's funny, I always assumed...
Never even come close to looking like that.
I always assumed that when they cast people for understudies, they try and get the same physique, so that it will fit the clothes.
Well, here's
you know?
The thing, is that, you know, we fit the same size. It's just that his is made of muscle and mine is made of other things.
I hear you. Believe mine is made of schmaltz. Complete. You don't even want to know how my underpants fit. It's just a terrifying thing.
I know.
Now, one of the reasons that we are talking now to Michael C. Bernardi is not just because he's been in this Broadway Fiddler on the Roof that will be running through the end of the year, but... You've also, as you said, been understudying or covering the role of Tevye, the main lead role that our friend of the neighborhood, Danny Burstyn, who was on this program many years ago, he is the Tony-nominated actor for playing Tevye. And just this week...
I'm honored to share the same airwaves, no question.
But just this week, did you not get to go on as Tevye?
I did. I can't believe it. It was an incredible experience. I know.
Tell me. So you knew this was going to happen. It wasn't like last minute Danny Burstyn calls you coughing, oh, you've got tuberculosis, you have to go on in 2 hours. You had an inkling.
I had been worrying about that scenario for the past, you know.
You weren't worrying, you were hoping. Come on.
Worrying. Terrified. Are you crazy? Of course. Terrified. Basically, every day was some kind of talking myself down, you know, or talking myself up or talking myself through. It was constantly waking up going, okay, all right, is today the day, you know, do I know where to put the cart exactly so it doesn't kill anyone? There's a lot of technical elements that play a role like that, and no matter how prepared you may feel after a rehearsal, after going over the script or watching the monitor, a couple days later, all those things that you felt secure with can float out of your brain because you're not actually doing it on a daily basis. And so being an understudy is a special kind of hell, and everyone should get a gift card or something.
But this time, you weren't told last minute. You knew at least what, 2 weeks?
No, I knew it was coming.
Yeah.
You know, like a comet. Like, we know that the sun's going to blow up one day. It's,
Well, if Donald Trump becomes president, it's possible, but okay.
No, it was unbelievable. I saw it coming, and, you know, I mean, listen, this is, anyone playing Tevye, right, has this, it's such an iconic role. That's, you're going to be compared to Zero, to Paul Lipson, to Topol, to Molina, to Harvey Weinstein, to Herschel Bernardi.
Right.
So anyone who plays Tevye is going to feel compared. As the son of Herschel Bernardi, that subliminally, I've worked with that for my whole life. You know, as much as my father has been the central, beautiful inspiration in my heart, at the same time, you know, he set a real high bar. For me to play Tevye on a Broadway stage, I really had to just focus on telling the story and really letting go of everything else and letting go of all the comparison. And the truth is that Danny, facing that similar issue, just set an incredible example of just to not judge anything, to not judge yourself, and just to allow the expression to come out and see what happens. And so I had an incredible time. It was on Wednesday, and I'm still just floating on a cloud of matzo balls.
A cloud of matzo balls. I love that. It was this past,
nothing,
was it?
Nothing sounds weird.
It was the Wednesday matinee, was it?
That's right, yeah.
Cool. Even still going back. Now, see, with Danny Burstyn and the other people who take on the role of Tevye, they might have Zero Mostel in their minds. They're like, don't do Zero, don't do Topol, don't do Paul Lipson, as you said. But you, being an understudy, being a cover, did you sort of have to do a watered-down version of Danny Burstyn so as not to throw the other actors off?
Well, I mean, that's why understudying is a special kind of hell, right? Because on one hand, I had the iconic performances, which include my father, which is a performance that I've heard about from little old Jewish ladies coming up to me my entire life, like, your father, when he put his finger up just like this, and he made this little smirk, and this and that, oh my God, that moment, right? And so that's in my being. But at the same time, watching Danny, and yes, you have to, on some level, as much as they encourage you to make it your own, at the same time, you got to do his path so not to kill anyone, you know, because there's really heavy props and scenery and lights, and so a lot of those things you have to match. But ultimately, you make your own, and that's the beautiful thing about Fiddler, is that two actors can do the same role, and even if you're trying to do a pure imitation, you can't do it, you know, exactly the same thing, let alone the same actor doing two different performances. It's always going to have its own fingerprint. And all I can say is that from all the information that I've gotten about this play, from everyone that I've known to play Tevye, and watching Danny, and all the notes and everything, you gotta take it and then let it go and say a prayer.
Is there anything that you can point to that your Tevye, at least for that one afternoon, was different from Danny Burstyn? So if you put your own little stamp on it, what did that stamp look like that might have been different from Burstyn's take on the role?
I mean, you know, I don't think that's my position to. I'm not about to play the compare and contrast game, because I think
I'm not saying better or worse. I'm saying,
no, I mean, yeah. Any actor, that's the last conversation that,
okay,
that any actor wants to hear, so I'm not going to say it. I'm not gonna encourage it.
Were there any oopses? Did anything go wrong? Did you go up at any point?
Right in the beginning. I didn't go up. right in tradition, there's this part that in the music where the part where he looks in the audience and says, how did this tradition start? I'll tell you. I don't know.
Right.
But it's a tradition, right? And so when we say that, we have these two stops, bum, bum, and a clap, right? And then it goes on. And we've done this show hundreds of times, but even still, it's an awkward part for choreography in the music. And this is new choreography, the first production with new staging and choreography. So even Danny, even all of us, you know, sometimes it gets a little flubbed. And so I said the line, and all the stomps were completely all over the place. Right in the beginning, right in the middle, right in the beginning of tradition. Here's the big moment, and all the stomps are totally off. And it's a mess on stage, and I knew it was a mess, and I just took this one big stomp just on my own to just kind of cap it off.
Good.
And in that moment, it was smooth sailing. And I'm so glad that it did happen right at the beginning, because it was like, okay, it happened. So let's move on and right, this is live theater.
Yeah, it wasn't even your mistake. You were saving the day. Because you were sort of saving the day there. It wasn't your boo-boo.
I did it right. It was me. I did good.
Everything. There you go.
Yeah. I'm real good.
Now, Michael C. Bernardi, you mentioned the legacy of your papa, Herschel
sure.
Bernardi. But it's interesting that you don't have stories or memories of him, because you are, by the time you were 1.5, he was gone.
That's right.
So it's like, how do you really feel a father's legacy and importance if you were a little pizzola last time you would have known him?
Right. I mean, it speaks to my father, and not just as an actor, but as a human being. I've had so many people come up to me and just tell me what kind of a mensch he was, and tell me what kind of a man he was, and how he really gave himself to his work and to inspiring and loving the people around him, and he was intelligent and politically minded, and even though that he wasn't there physically, there was kind of this wonderful scavenger hunt that I've been on for different puzzle pieces of this mosaic of my father. And with every little story, every little bit of information, every little recorded song that I could listen to and find on YouTube, it's just another puzzle piece. And doing Fiddler on the Roof and playing this role, it's that moment where the puzzle, you really start to see it. And you see the man.
What's something that is unexpected? What's an anecdote that you found out about your dad that kind of surprised you?
Oh, yeah. No, one of my favorite stories about my father is I was talking to this casting director. She said, I met your father, you know, when I was an assistant over at Warner Brothers. He probably would never have remembered me, but I remember sitting in the waiting room, and I see Herschel Bernardi, and he's reading a magazine. And I notice that his foot is, like, shaking, just incessantly shaking. And he puts the magazine down, he stands up, he goes and gets some water. He drinks some water, comes back, sits down, reads the magazine, foot shaking. Stands up again, goes back to the water, paces up and down the hall. He's wiping his sweat with, a handkerchief, and this and that and this. And she's just staring at him, and he realizes that she's staring at him. And he looks at her, and he says, as long as I've been in this business, auditioning never gets any easier. And I think after hearing so many stories of how this kind of invincible Jewish Paul Bunyan character has been put together in my head wonderfully, it's always been wonderful to hear those stories of, right, he's a human being. Ultimately, doing the show, doing Broadway, the glamour of Broadway can be so bright sometimes, especially from seeing it from the outside, but actually being in it and coming to work on a daily basis. And, you know, when you're doing that second show on a Saturday, you know, you've been doing 8 shows a week for months, and your body's tired and you're exhausted, and as much as you love what you do, the last thing you want to do is perform for Avengers. You want to, you know, you want to roll in a ball and you have to reach deep and go, no, damn it, the story needs to be told. The people need to be saved. The world, you know, and all this stuff. And that struggle is a very human thing of getting up and going to work, even when, you know, you don't really feel like it. That's a lesson that I think I could not have learned even if my father were alive today. It's a lesson that the environment has taught me. And so in a lot of ways, the world of Tevye, the show of Seven on the Roof, the world of Broadway theater fathered my father, right? It gave him his identity. It was the stone that he sharpened himself on. And so now I'm getting that same opportunity to sharpen myself on that same stone. And so it's many lessons that I've been craving from my father that I didn't even know he could have given to me, even if you were around. So I'm very grateful for all of it.
Well, speaking of work, you know that you're set through December when Fiddler on the Roof will close. They've announced the closing date a few weeks ago.
Sure.
What are you going to be auditioning for? What, do you have a plan for January?
So, I mean, here's the thing, you know, we live at Gypsy Lutz. We don't know what what is coming. I'm unbelievably grateful to be where I am right now. I did shoot a movie that should be coming out, I believe, in the fall. And it stars Chaz Boseman and Josh Gad. And it's about kind of the beginnings of the NAACP. And Thurgood Marshall, and so it's called Marshall. Ooh. And so I have a really kind of wonderful role in that film, and I'm really looking forward to that coming out. And ultimately, you know, I spent a lot of time in Los Angeles doing the audition game and getting really close to booking jobs, but ultimately having too much body hair to really get cast, you know.
Let me ask you something, Michael Cibonadi. Let me. You're a handsome person. But you do have a Jewish look, if there is such a thing, and God knows I have it. Has that cost you, do you think? Has that worked against you sometimes?
Well, I've worked against it. You know, being in Los Angeles, everything is very commercialized. I mean, not to say that New York isn't commercialized, but, you know, L.A. it's very clean-cut, right? And so I think I definitely was playing against myself and trying to be a more kind of clean-cut guy when I know, and my friends know, that I'm not. Like, I'm a beastie kind of guy. And so,
all right.
So being in New York for the past, just now that I'm going on auditions because of, you know, now that I'm working and stuff, the roles that I'm getting they fit me more on a more intrinsic level. So I'm really just looking forward to, like, being in New York and having the opportunity to go after roles that really match me and not having to go to the gym every day to get abs that are never going to come.
Now, also, since you have had this steady role in Fiddler for many months now, does that, do casting directors and agents and directors of things look at you a little differently? Do they welcome you a little more? Because, he's on Broadway now. Does it make a difference?
That's the whole thing about an actor's career. You're nobody until one person says, oh yeah, you can play, right? And then all of a sudden everyone goes, oh, what are you doing? Oh, you're doing it? Oh, this person said yes? And that's the truth, is that you can get 1,000 no's and all it takes is that one yes. And then more people are apt to say yes.
And eventually you'll be replaced with a Michael Cibonadi type.
Well, that's the quote from my father. Did you know that?
No.
Oh yeah, or at least he's told that he said it all the time, but that he is quoted as saying it, even if he got it from someone else. He's online and saying that, I think, on quote.com. The 5 stages of an actor's career, and I might miss one. Who's Herschel Bernardi? Get me Herschel Bernardi. Get me a Herschel Bernardi type. Get me Herschel Bernardi for cheaper. Who's Herschel Bernardi?
I don't think he made that, but I think that's been around acting circles for many, many years. But
imagine. But, you know, my father was around for many, many years. But all that matters is that his name is next to the quote.
That's good.
Ages, he will go down as saying that line, no matter how many people he stole it from.
Now, let me ask you also, being first in L.A. and now in New York for a bit, and maybe not being able to stay in New York depending on the jobs you get in the next year, how does that affect having a personal life. I don't know your dating situation or...
Sure, yeah, no, I think about that, along with every actor thinks about that, right? Like, I have a girlfriend that is a wonderful, wonderful actress, and she's working on something with Robert Lopez right now.
Oh, my.
Yeah, over at the Atlantic Theater. And
wait a minute, so who's your girlfriend? You can name her.
Sure, Caitlin Donahue.
Caitlin, that doesn't sound Jewish.
Oh, no, she's Donahue? Donahue of
not a borough block.
No, she's straight from Jerusalem. What are you talking about? It's an Israeli name.
Oh, is it really? Well, that does bring us to the idea of how Jewish
were... The Donahues.
The Donahues, there we go. How Jewish were you raised by your mom?
How Jewish was I raised?
Yeah.
I mean, my upbringing has always been celebrating Judaism and Jewish, but mainly Jewish culture, you know? And I honestly believe this. And this kind of mirrors my career as well. As an actor, for a very long time, I wasn't working. And I had to kind of nurse this very small flame of a dream of something that I believed in. This faith, right? That faith that sometimes it dwindles down to an ember. But as long as I can just read a play, or as long as I can take a little workshop, or do a play. It doesn't matter if I'm, you know, selling tickets on Times Square, or being a dancer for bar mitzvahs, or handing out coconut water at events.
Now, hold on. Have you done both of those things?
All three of them, yeah.
So you have some dancing skills. Well enough, not just for Broadway, but to dancing at bar mitzvah.
Mean,
that's major. That's epic.
Russian ticks. So I call myself a motivated mover.
Oh, there you go. Yeah. All right.
Keeping that flame alive, right? Keeping that flame of faith alive. And so the way that I look at Judaism, I think having my father pass away at such an early age, along with my father's side of the family, they dwindled out. And I think that keeping that flame alive, even though I was raised in kind of, you know, in Los Angeles, it's very new age. It's very kind of,
sure,
you know, open to all interpretations and interfaith and all that stuff. But just putting those, you know, lighting a candle during Hanukkah, you know, oh, I missed a couple of days. What day are we on? Okay. Night five? Okay, I'll light night five. Okay, great. Going to the high holidays and doing singing a song from Fiddler on the Roof. And ultimately, I feel like that's the story of Fiddler on the Roof, is that at the end, after all this persecution, that question, that right before the final note, that it begs, you know, do we still do this? After all the pain and all the suffering that by following this, people have oppressed us, do we still do it? And the answer is always yes. But because of diaspora, because of going all around the world and being separated and having to adapt to different cultures, I honestly believe that as long as you just keep the flame alive, for me, it's not about being the most pious Jew that I can be. It's about just keeping that flame alive. Now doing Fiddler, I do. I feel much more connected to Judaism, and showed up for Simcha Torah this year.
Oh, yay!
Right, and so, like...
Wait, did you go to the Actors' Temple?
That flame is starting to burn that much brighter.
Did you go to the Actors' Temple for Simcha Torah?
I didn't. I went up to a temple on the Upper West Side and just danced with a bunch of people I didn't know.
Was that Bnei Jeshurun?
Old family. Yes, it was.
I know these things. I'm kind of Jewish myself, you know.
Oh my God, you're a real Jew.
Well, I not only keep the flame going, I pour gasoline on it and throw it on the goyim.
Ah, it's hot.
It sure is. Now, let me ask you, you mentioned dancing at bar mitzvahs and coconut water giving outing.
Yeah.
Any other of the weird jobs that you had to do before you got the steady fiddler gig?
Oh, yeah. I mean, selling tickets in Times Square, comedy tickets, and what else? I posed for a coffee table book, a photography coffee table book, where they took really up close pictures of my chest hair.
Wait, what?
No,
whoa.
I don't know if that's pornography. No, you know, no private parts were exposed, but you know, it was artistic. I don't know where that coffee table book is. It's probably in, you know, Japan somewhere.
It's probably Robert Mapplethorpe's attic or something. I don't know. Good Lord.
You know, just like, you know, catering jobs, like every actor, and also what, my mother, she's got a business selling raw ingredients, buying raw ingredients and distributing them to companies out here in the U.S. And so I learned that business, and, you know, so I know all about isomalto oligosaccharide and glucosamine. And
oh, of course you do.
Groitin and things. It's all very good for the bones and for hydration. It's very good. The joints.
All right. No, this is, you know, I've heard of glucosamine. I don't know that isomalt stuff.
I mean, it's,
I like an icy malted. That I like.
Isomalt oligosaccharide. IMO for short.
There you go.
The joints. Very good for the joints. But, you know, the truth is that, you know, I think, I remember being in acting school and everyone going like, oh, we're going to graduate and we're just going to get this sheet of paper and we're actors. Like, what does that mean? And I remember feeling that way. But the truth is that the actor training is really good training for anything, because you're thrown with a new world every play, every story. And so ultimately you're trained to go, okay, what's this job? And you're basically learning a new script and you're going, okay, this, and it's all about adaptation and you know, selling yourself and all that. And so I honestly, when anyone's like, oh, my kid wants to be an actor and wants to go to acting school and I'm terrified, and I go, listen, this is the workhorse, you know, the workforce loves actors. You know, I mean, they don't like it when they, you know, leave to go on an audition or something, but, you know, they do a good job. They work hard, you know, and they can take direction.
Now, speaking of acting, we've talked so much about Fiddler and Mordecha and Tevye and the rest. You've had other roles. You were in a couple of Adam Sandler movies, weren't you?
That's right, yeah.
What was that like?
A nice Jewish guy. Fun. They're a blast, you know? I mean, listen, it was a really nice reality check for me, because I spent so much time in, you know, I went to SUNY Purchase Conservatory of Acting, which is, you know, it's a very, very esteemed school. And I spent 4 years, you know, playing old Russian men, you know, and these, you know, doing Shakespeare and Tennessee Williams and Eugene O'Neill and, you know, these incredibly, you know, beautiful pieces that show the extent of the human condition. And then you get out, and it was really healthy for me to get a nice dose of, like, make them laugh, kid. Like, let's make some, like, entertainment that, you know, gets people in the seats and makes and gets people to have fun. And the two are not separate. Like ultimately, the people going to see Long Day's Journey and Tonight are going to want to be entertained, even though, you know, it's a meditation on family and alcoholism and, you know, all these heavy concepts. Ultimately, you want to give people a fulfilling moment. You want to give people something that breaks the monotony.
I have long been a believer that when, since Long Day's Journey and Tonight is about 4 hours long, in between acts 2 and 3, they should screen Happy Gilmore 2 in every production.
You know what? That's exactly what I'm talking about.
Yeah.
Happy Gilmore, that's a brilliant film. I don't care. It should be up there, right on the top 10 list, next to The Godfather, which I drafted.
But wait, which ones were you in?
I did the House Bunny. I did Bucky Larson, Born to be a Star.
Wow. I remember when that came out.
That was a raunchy one. That was real raunchy.
Well, what was your scene in that?
Here's the thing, right? Yeah. Like, you know, I think as proud as I am to have any work on my resume, right?
Uh-huh.
And here's the whole thing of, like, the comparison that I felt with my father, right? It's like, okay, my father died. And you look on his IMDb, you Google his name, and, oh my God, he did this, he did that, he did this, and all these, like, esteemed, critically acclaimed projects, and oh my God, it's wonderful. And if I died today, oh, okay, I did Bucky Larson, Born to be a Star, where I played a porno presenter and the house bunny, and okay, all right, Dino Croc versus Super Gator, I was that guy in there, and Spiders, which I got killed in pretty good. Like, okay, very happy to have those jobs, but ultimately, I think just knowing that I'm very happy and very grateful to be involved in something that, you know, that I think that my mother could be proud of. So, and I say that with the gentlest of criticism of, you know, of so many people that, you know, work so hard and make, you know, these brilliant, you know, comedies. But, you know, I want to be able to show more of myself, and, you know,
You've already shown your chest hair. We've seen that.
My chest hair, exactly. You know, people can pick that up in a book. I want to show my heart. I want to show my soul. So if that's highfalutin, then shoot me.
There you go.
Guilty as charged.
Well, that's the point of being an actor. You get to be highfalutin and lowfalutin. I like to think of this program as kind of middlefalutin.
Yeah, and so that's all I want. You know what? You said it perfect.
Middlefalutin. And we are saluting the middlefalutin.
I don't want to be lowfalutin, but I just want to be midfalutin.
There you go. There you go. Michael C. Bernardi, who has been actually a delightfully falutin guest here in the neighborhood. We want to remind everybody that even though you missed him as Tevye this past week, you can still see him playing Mortka the Innkeeper in Fiddler on the Roof on Broadway all the way through the end of this year. Please go get your tickets. It's a lovely revival of the show. It's directed, I think, by, was it Bartlett Sher?
Absolutely.
Is the director there, and Hofesh Schechter is the new choreographer. So they're not doing Jerome Robbins for the 50 millionth time. It's a little bit different. So last question for you, since obviously I'm more into the comedy mode of things.
Do it.
At one point, you were something of a stand-up comedian.
I was. I used to be really funny.
I wonder what happened with that. But it was a long time ago. Hint, hint.
It was a what?
It was a very long time ago.
Yeah, I was 8 years old. I was an 8-year-old stand-up comic.
How the hell did that happen?
At the Comedy Store.
Wait, so how, what, Jamam no Mitzi Shore? How did this happen?
How did this happen? So I was an only kid. I'm still an only kid. My father passed away. A lot of people were sad. My mother was, you know, she was going through a lot. So she had parties. She had a lot of parties with a lot of her friends and family that were coming to support her. And so I grew up in an environment with a lot of, you know, adults hanging around. And I had the best time at my mother's parties. And I had more fun at those parties than hanging out playing t-ball with any kids. And so I kind of developed a connection with adults and talking to them about relationship problems and talking about, you know, all sorts of things. So a friend of my mother's said, you know, there's this kid's stand-up comedy class. Maybe Michael would be interested. I think he'd be good for that. And so, and also I was already memorizing all of Fozzie Bear's jokes, and I was watching Robin Williams live at the Met, like, on repeat.
Wow.
Like 12 times a day for whatever reason. And so I went to this class. It was like 2 weeks. We put together a bit, and then we, every kid got a chance to perform on the main stage. And about 95% of the kids backed out at the last minute, and there was like 3 kids that went up. 2 of them, you know, freaked out on stage. I went up, I did my act, and because no one knew that I needed glasses, and I really couldn't see the audience, and so I wasn't afraid of them, and just told my act, I killed. I just murdered the Comedy Store, and I started this career as a regular at the Comedy Store, and until basically a couple comics got pissed off that I was like getting some really good time slots, getting better time slots than some veteran comics, and they said, okay, this kid's got to learn the ropes. Put him on Wednesdays and Tuesdays, and then I went and did Wednesdays and Tuesdays, and I had some horrifyingly traumatic experience where, you know, 2 drunks are in the audience, and they're the only people in the audience, and they're going, tell me a knock-knock joke, kid, and here's $5, and, you know, things like that. So.
And did that sour you ultimately on ever trying stand-up again?
Oh, I've toyed with it. But in a weird way, I respect stand-up comedy too much to offer myself to it. I just...
Oh, no, come on. Now, wait a minute. Do you remember any of the jokes you told when you were 8 years old?
I started off with, hello, my name is Michael Bernardi, and I have a bad life.
That's cute. That works.
That was right. It's good. It's a good opening line. Then I talked about... let's see. Okay, so there was a night... I don't know, you remember, the mid-90s, right? Who can forget this story? My mother was watching 2020, and the guest was Lorena Bobbitt. And so she was talking about how she had cut off her husband's ding-dong. So I thought it was horrifying, but they asked her a question, and her answer was, well, I didn't mean to be vicious. I thought that was hilarious, and so I started cracking up. My mother said, go to your room, you can't listen to this. The next night, I did a whole 15-minute act on Lorena Bobbitt, and the police officer that, did they send dogs to find this penis? And, what was the reaction of the police, the first officer on the scene that found it? Did he wave it around his head? Did he pick it up with it? What was that feeling? How did Lorena Bobbitt do it? Was it, did she make a ceremony out of it? Was it with a samurai sword or something? Or just really dark... humor.
Which is great coming out of an 8-year old.
Yeah. It's why I killed. I was the Andrew Dice Clay of the 8-year old.
And of course, if there was a penis going into an 8-year old, then you'd be arrested. So you got to be careful.
Then I'd be arrested.
Yes.
Exactly.
Ladies and gentlemen, we've been chatting about Tevyes and penises.
What a note to end.
What a note. So let's end. Can you end with a musical note? Can you sing? Just like a little passage.
Times, right?
Sorry?
They did this New York Times article about me and the whole story and everything. And that's just an incredible honor. But the greatest honor is that they included a picture of me and my father. He's picking me up and I'm a baby, and I'm completely naked. And so my baby Schmeckle, has made it into the New York Times. And my mother couldn't be prouder.
That is my dream, by the way.
Right? I'm living it.
My Schmeckle in full color, Sunday section. And it would have to be a gatefold to be in the New York Times. It would. So you know what? I just thought of the perfect way to end this, if you don't mind, if it's okay with
Please.
You. Because I know you have this is Saturday, Shabbos, you have two shows coming up today. But can you give me a little bit of Tevyes singing a little something, like a verse?
What, you like Shania Twain or something, or...
No, I mean from Fiddler. Since we missed you, I didn't see you on stage on Wednesday. Give me a little bit of your Tevyes, and that is how we will go out with Michael C. Bernardi.
Thing or you want the end? Okay, I know what to do. Why not?
Go for it.
Okay, are you ready?
I am ready.
Okay, let's see. No, you know what? I'm going to do the beginning.
Okay.
Dear God, you made many, many poor people. I realize, of course, it's no shame to be poor. But it's no great honor either. What would have been so terrible if I had a small fortune?
Oh, you're not going to sing.
I were a rich man.
Oh, there we go.
You'll have to come.
Yeah, no, that's that. I hope you have a little more energy on stage on that matinee. I'm going to fall asleep on page 4 of the playbill, I'll tell you. Come on!
Thank you very much.
At least do the yigel diggle part. Just do the diggle diggle.
What is this? Am I a wind-up monkey?
No, you're an actor.
This is abuse. I'm calling the union.
Call your agent. There you go.
All right, you want a yigel diggle?
Just a little yigel diggle.
You want a yigel diggle?
I do.
All right. All day long I'd be deeply bum. If I were a wealthy man, I wouldn't have to work hard. If I were a deeply rich, idle man. Good enough? The job?
You get the job. You do. You get the hair posing job, you get the Schmeckle finding job, and the Tevyes job on Broadway. Michael C. Bernardi, thank you so much for joining us in the neighborhood. Much career success to you going forward, and shalom.
Thank you, Rabbi.